If you all will stand, I will read to you Mark 11, verses 15 through 19, where it says, "And they come to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple and began to cast out them that sold and bought in the temple. So he cast out both those that sold and bought, and overthrew the tables of the money changers, and the seats of them that sold doves, and would not suffer that any man should carry any vessel throughout the temple. And he taught, saying unto them, Is it not written, My house shall be called of all nations the house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. And the scribes and chief priests heard it and sought how they might destroy him. For they feared him, because all the people was astonished at his doctrine. And when even was come, he went out of the city." You may be seated. I think this is a very strange scripture for the Judeo-Christian to understand. They believe that Jesus loved everybody and died for everybody. But I don't believe that's the truth. Jesus goes into the temple and he cast out the money changers and overthrew their tables and seats. After this happened, the scribes and chief priests heard it, and then they sought how they might destroy him. Now, does Jesus love everybody? Didn't Jesus cast them out of his Father's temple? Did Jesus a few days later die for everyone, including these same scribes and chief priests? Why did these people, the scribes and chief priests, fear Jesus and want to kill him? Do you think God the Father will forgive them for plotting and murdering his son? This is the second time that our Savior Jesus Christ cast out of his house the money changers and those that stole the doves. The first is found in John chapter 2, 13 through 17. And the second was Matthew 21, 12 through 16. And the verses we read at the beginning of this message. And the third time was Luke 19, 45 through 47. I think most people just feel that this happened one time. But it happened three times. In the book written by John, the first time it happened, it says that he made a scourge of small cords. That means a whip. And drove out both the animals, that was sheep, oxen, and doves, and the sellers of them. I don't think Jesus liked these people very much. The Old Testament is simply the history of how Satan became prince of the world and caused our first parents to defect from God. It relates how the synagogue of Satan was established on this earth, and it tells how it has worked since to prevent God's plan for the rule of the universe being established on this earth. Christ came to the earth when the conspiracy reached the stage that, to use his own words, Satan controlled all those in high places. He exposed the synagogue of Satan, and he denounced those who belonged to it as the sons of the devil. He castigated him as the father of lies and the prince of deceit. He identified the money changers. Now, what do we call money changers today? Bankers. As being who? The scribes and the Pharisees of his day. What so many people seem to forget is the fact that Christ came on earth to release it from the bonds of Satan, with which we were bound tighter and tighter as the years rolled by. Christ gave us the solution to our problem. You think Jesus would talk about this problem? He gave us the solution to our problem when he told us he must go forth and teach the truth regarding this what? Conspiracy. He promised that if we did this, knowledge of the truth would set us free. The Luciferian conspiracy has developed into in its semi-final stage simply because we have failed to put the mandate Christ gave us into effect. There are preachers that have talked about that Satan was put in prison for so many years and he was released. I believe that's got to be true. For it had to be somewhere around this time, 1600s, 1700s, when he was let loose. I'm going to talk about the Great Eviction. In the year 1290, King Edward issued the decree which became known as the Great Eviction. What? All Jews were expelled from the country of England. All of them. Now, there were a few there who kept everything secret, but basically they all were gone. And they were to be kicked out forever. All the Jews were kicked out of England. Our ancestors come from England. What was wrong with our ancestors? Or what was right with our ancestors? It was because of usury and ritual sex crimes committed by the Jewish religious community against the Goyim. Unbelievable. This were the main causes that they were kicked out of England, besides the fact that they hate our Savior and their holy books, quote unquote, state that he is now in hell boiling in a cauldron of body fluids. You remember what Peter Stuyvesant said about these people? But this eviction did not last forever. It did last for about 360 years. Until the year 1650. So from 1290 to 1650, there were no Jews in England. 1650. That was 30 years after the Pilgrims landed in Plymouth, Massachusetts. They landed in 1620. They were here 30 years before they got back into England, the Jews. And this was 126 years before America broke away from England and gained their so-called independence. What compelled the British to rescind the eviction and let the Jews back in? When was this eviction over? One has to remember that England was not the only European state to evict the Jews. The following nations kicked out the blasphemous Jews after England. In 1306, France expelled the Jews. In 1348, Saxony. In 1360, Hungary. In 1370, Belgium. In 1380, Slovakia. In 1420, Austria. In 1444, the Netherlands. And we talked about this before. In 1492, it was Spain. The expulsion of the Jews from Spain has special significance because Jewish moneylenders, or bankers, succeeded in having the loans they made the state secured by the right to collect taxes levied upon the people. After Spain and other European nations wrested economic control from the Jewish moneylenders, did the rebirth of Western civilization occur? Following the Great Eviction, the Jews resumed living in ghettos, where they were isolated from the masses of the population. Remember, Jews lived in the ghettos? Why did they live there? They were under the control of the rabbis. many of whom were influenced by the wealthy Jewish moneylenders who remained in their various sanctuaries. In the ghettos, the agents inspired a spirit of hatred and revenge in their hearts against those who had done what? Evicted them. The rabbis reminded them that as the chosen people of God, the day would come when they would have their revenge and eventually inherit the earth. This was not true. They weren't the chosen people of God, but they were liars, and it was a good argument for them to seek their revenge. This came to pass, especially in the Caribbean Sea, where many Jews became pirates, who sought and got revenge against their latest great evictor, who was Spain. The piracy of the Jews amassed a fortune in booty taken from a number of Spanish ships. The booty was used in their new living places in the New World. And Recife, Brazil, and in the island of Jamaica and in Newport, Rhode Island, were three places out of many where the money funded Jewish commerce and industry. This also included the vast slave trade routes that the Jewish merchants handled, where? In the Caribbean, South America, North America. While in the ghettos, in an atmosphere of hatred, the desire of revenge was developed by the Illuminati. They organized these negative conditions based on terrorism into the New World Revolutionary Movement. The international money barons designed, financed, and controlled the World Revolutionary Movement and used this as the instrument by which they would obtain their revenge on Christian churches and the monarchy of Europe. It was based on terrorism. I thought that was supposed to be our enemy. The money barons used this movement to infiltrate the Jews back into the countries from which they had been expelled. Because their reentry was against the law, they had to be thorough Jewish undergrounds. The Jews who infiltrated into the undergrounds of European cities could not obtain lawful employment, but were supplied with funds from the Jewish booty and other monies from Jewish sources. There is significant evidence which proves that the Illuminati and a group of internationalists were the secret power behind the World Revolutionary Movement. As the events of history are looked at in their chronological sequence, it can be seen how the Illuminati used different groups to serve their purpose. They involve millions of people in revolutions and wars to further their own secret and selfish ambitions. The Jews were successful in infiltrating back into the countries from which they had been expelled. The countries of Europe threw them out, but didn't eventually the Jews come back? How did that happen? The Jewish money barons in France, Holland, and Germany tried their planned revolutionary technique in England first. They used their underground agents to cause trouble between the king and his government, employers and labor, ruling class and worker, church and state. The plotters injected controversial issues into what? Politics and religion. And divided the people in two opposing camps. You got Catholics and Protestants. Then they split the Protestants into conformists and nonconformists. When King Charles I was brought into disagreement with his parliament, there was a Jewish money baron in Holland. His name is Manasseh ben Israel. And his agents contacted a person in England. Does anybody know what person the agents of Jewish money baron Manasseh ben Israel contacted? You got it. Oliver Cromwell. They offered him large sums of money if he would carry out their plan to overthrow the British throne. Why? They weren't allowed back in England. Moneylenders from four countries financed Cromwell until he had a new model army, advanced with the best arms and equipment money could buy. Oliver thanked the synagogue for their financial support. He admitted to them that the admission of Jews back to England would be impossible while Charles I was still alive. Oliver reasoned that King Charles I would have to be assassinated rather than executed. And he offered his help in providing a way for the assassin to escape. But the king was not assassinated. He was first given the opportunity to flee, and the king took it. And then he was quickly recaptured. Cromwell purged most of the members of the parliament that were loyal to the king. But most of the parliament was not in favor of executing the king, since any settlement would have disqualified Cromwell from receiving the blood money promised him by the international money barons. Then Cromwell ordered Parliament to be purged of all those members who had voted in favor of a settlement with the king. When the purge was finished, there was only 50 members of Parliament left. England had no royalty. Did you know that? Now, there's something that happened that's very interesting. The conspirators couldn't find an English lawyer who would draw up the criminal charges against King Charles I. They couldn't find any English lawyer. I find it's very similar to what happened in the Old Testament, when King Saul was fighting against the future kingship of David. Saul had gathered the sons of Amalek, who were the priests. Saul falsely accused them of being disloyal to him and loyal to David. He ordered them all to be killed. And then something strange happened. What happened? All the servants of King Saul did what? Refused his order to murder the 85 priests. Refused it. So what did King Saul do? After the servants of King Saul had refused, King Saul turned to Doeg, the Edomite, Jew, who slew all 85 priests, plus the city of Nob, the city of the priests, along with all their elderly men, women, and children and animals. That's in 1 Samuel chapter 22, verses 17 through 19. The Jews have a history of what? Murder, robbery, and deceit, especially against the Goyim. So, like it was in Saul's day, the followers of Oliver, since they didn't have any lawyer in England, they turned to an alien Jew, Manasseh ben Israel's agent in England, to draw up the indictment upon which King Charles I was tried in court. They went to a Jew lawyer. The king was found guilty of the charges leveled against him by who? Jewish moneylenders. not by the people of England. He was publicly beheaded in the year 1649. Then there was no king or queen in England. The Jews got their revenge on the royalty of England by expelling them from England. They paid Oliver Cromwell his blood money, just as they paid Judas 16 centuries previously. Oh. The Jews got back in by eliminating English royalty, and England has never been the same. The Jewish moneylenders loaned the crown heads of Europe the money required to fight the many wars that sprung up. The national debts of all European nations began their climb higher and higher. England was without a king or queen for 11 years. Oliver Cromwell proclaimed himself the Lord Protector of England. Now, who was Oliver? He started out as a Unitarian. There they are again, a Unitarian, who became a Puritan. He also was a Rosicrucian Freemason. They're always there when there's trouble. Who looked like a Protestant. He was not royalty. An Anabaptist fought against him and his policy of letting the Jews back into England, but of course they lost. A year before he died, Cromwell received a loan from the Jews of Amsterdam with the promise that the Temple of Jerusalem would eventually be rebuilt. Isn't that interesting? Well, England was involved in several more wars. One was with Scotland, one was with Ireland. And in the next couple of years, trouble started in the American colonies in 1656. Then the next year, Cromwell died, and his son Richard was named the protector. He resigned after serving 2 years. Well, England will get its royalty back. You knew that was going to happen. The next year, Charles II was proclaimed King of England. The monarchy had been restored after 11 years. There was 11 years from 1649 to 1660 where England had no king or queen. Then the Duke of York became King James II of England. In 3 years, the king abducted, and William of Orange and Mary were proclaimed King and Queen of England. In the final analysis, none of the countries and people involved in the wars and revolutions obtained any lasting benefits. No permanent or satisfactory solution was reached regarding the political, economic, and religious issues involved. The only people to benefit were the small group of moneylenders who financed the wars and revolutions, and their friends and agents who supplied the armies, the ships, and the munitions. Now, here's something happens. 1694, there was a deceptive name, Bank of England. It was founded 1694. They got back in 1650. And within 50 years, they founded the first national bank of any country. It was deceptively named, as they all are, as it gives the impression it is controlled by the government of England, which, of course, it's not. It's a private institution founded and run by Jews. This was the first national bank in the history of the world, and it was owned and run by Jews. They charged usury, which was against God's laws on finance. Now, this is what, 82 years before the United States declared their independence from England? 4 years after the Bank of England began, which would make it what? The bank began in what year? 1694. 4 years later, it'd be 1698. The Jewish control of the British money supply had grown by leaps and bounds. They had flooded the country with so much money that the government debt to the bank had increased by 1,280%. The names of the Jewish controllers of the Bank of England are never revealed. But as thought by their control of the Bank of England, Jews had control over the British royal family. Now, in 1744, Mayor Amschel Bauer is born in Frankfurt, Germany. Oh, 1744. Our country starts, what, 1776? So he'd be a man when the country started, right? His father placed a red sign above the entrance door of his money lending house. The sign is a red hexagram with which Rothschild instruction will end up on the Israel flag some two centuries later. And we'll look at that now. You've all seen that, haven't you? If you look at the Pope here with his mitre, on each side of his mitre, what do you see there? It's the six-pointed hexagram. What is the Catholic Pope doing with a six-pointed hexagram on his mitre? I found that very interesting to show how they are connected. Following his father's death in the year 1760, oh, we're almost to the Declaration of Independence, aren't we? Bauer returned to Frankfurt. And what was at Frankfurt? The Frankfurt School that came to the United States to take over his father's business. Bauer recognized the significance of the red hexagram and changed his name from Bauer, B-A-U-E-R, to Rothschild. Rot in German means red, and Schild in German means shield or sign. So it's a red shield or red sign in English. 10 years later, now we're up to 1770. Rothschild drew up plans for the creation of the Illuminati, and he entrusted an Ashkenazi Jew whose name was Adam Weishaupt and a crypto Jew who was outwardly a Roman Catholic Jesuit. Now, Xavier University is a Jesuit university. The Illuminati was based upon the teachings of the Talmud, the teachings of the rabbinical Jews. This is about the same time as the American Revolution, 6 years before the war with England. The Jews had already created the National Bank of England, and they look where for its wealth? They look to the New World. They looked over here. And South America and Central America. In the mid-1700s, Britain had reached its height of power around the world. But Britain had fought four costly wars since the creation of its privately owned central bank. The British Parliament was borrowing heavily from the bank. England was greatly in debt. So what do you think the government did? The government embarked on a new program of trying to raise revenue of the, who? American colonies in order to pay for the interest due to the bank, which was owned by the Jews. But in the United States, the scourge of privately owned central bank had not yet hit the colonies. Now there became trouble in the colonies. During the period, there was a severe shortage of precious coins to pay for goods. So the colonies began to distribute their own money, known as colonial scrip. The first place I heard of this was in Richard Hoskins' newsletter. I never learned this in school. Colonial script. The endeavor was successful and provided reliable means of exchange and helped to provide a feeling of unity between the colonies. The paper money was what? Debt-free and printed in the public interest. When the Bank of England found out what the colonies were doing, how'd they find out about this? Benjamin Franklin told them. They immediately passed the Currency Act of 1774. That's 2 years before our war ended. What did this act do? This act prohibited the colonies from issuing their own money and ordered them to pay all future taxes in what? Gold or silver coins. This forced the colonies on a gold and silver standard. Within 1 year, this caused a depression. What's 1 year from that? 1775. It caused a depression. The inability of the colonists to get power to issue their own money permanently and out of the hands of King George III and the international bankers was the prime reason for the Revolutionary War. We got to read that again. We were not told this in our history books. We thought it was a small tax on the tea. The inability of the colonists to get power to issue their own money permanently out of the hands of King George III and the international bankers was the prime reason for the Revolutionary War. It's the very same problem we have today. Same problem. By the time the first shots were fired on April 19, 1775, the colonies were drained of gold and silver coins through British taxation. As a result, the constitutional government began to print its own money to finance the war. But there was way too much money that was printed. It was a lot more than just to facilitate trade. Now I'm going to tell you about the Bavarian government gets the Protocols of the Elders. Anybody know what year that was? The guy had a copy of it, was writing to give it to the next Freemason house. He was struck by lightning and killed, and the Bavarian government came into these protocols. They've been preserved. You can get a copy of it. In Europe, remember that 1784. Well, the revolution is what, 1776? When did our Constitution start? 1789? We've had 13 years of the Articles of Confederation. An act of God placed the Bavarian government in possession of evidence which proved the existence of the continuing Luciferian conspiracy. Remember I talked about Adam Weishaupt, the Ashkenazi Jew, who acted like a Jesuit Catholic, defected from Christianity and embraced a Luciferian ideology while teaching in Ingolstadt University. In 1770, the moneylenders, who had recently organized the House of Rothschild, retained him to revise and modernize the age-old protocols designed to give who? The synagogue of Satan, ultimate world domination, so they could impose the Luciferian ideology upon what remains of the human race and Israel after the final social cataclysm by use of satanic despotism. He completed his task on May the 1st. You remember May Day, celebrated by the Roman, by the communists, and now by us. May the 1st, 1776. Oh, so that's an important date for the communists. 1776 is also an important date for our country. The plan required the destruction of all two things, all existing governments and religions. Well, that affects us, doesn't it? They want to destroy our religion, destroy our government. I would say they have completely destroyed our government. And they have just about totally destroyed Christianity. They turned it around. This objective was to be reached by dividing the masses, which he termed goyim, into opposing camps and ever-increasing numbers on what? Political, racial, social, economic, and other issues. The opposing sides were then to be armed and an incident provided which would cause them to fight and weaken themselves as they destroyed national governments and the religious institutions. Well, the United States started off with its government following the Articles of Confederation. It lasted 13 years. The nations conducted its affairs during the last years of the Revolutionary War, which helped to negotiate the Treaty of Paris in 1783. And it also produced two monumental pieces of legislation in the Land Ordinance of 1785 and the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, which included Ohio. But the Articles of Confederation provided no power of national taxation, no power to control trade, and it provided for a comparatively weak executive. Therefore, it could not enforce legislation. It had no direct origin in the people themselves. It only knew state sovereignty. Each state had the power to collect its own taxes, issue currency, and provide for its own militia. The government could not govern efficiently because of a general lack of power to compel states to honor national obligations. The government's main activity was to control foreign policy and to conclude treaties. Economic credibility was a major problem because the government owned $43 million after the Revolutionary War. But who was the debt owed to? The debt was mainly owed to American patriots. They did not owe the money to the Jewish banks. I'll say that again. They did not owe the money to the Jewish banks. So then they conduct the Constitutional Convention. How long was that? They started in May, and they ended in September. May, June, July, August, 5 months they met. There were 41 out of 55 men who were from the Continental Congress who met in the Constitutional Convention with every state except men from Rhode Island. They were educated men, and they argued about what form of government that the nation was to serve for almost half a year in secrecy. These men planned to fix what the Articles of Confederation failed. But did they? Towards the end of the Revolution, the Continental Congress met at Independence Hall in Philadelphia to find a way to raise desperately needed money. In 1771, they allowed their financial superintendent to open a privately owned central bank. Anybody know his name? He's made in a three-people statue in Chicago. There was George Washington, there was a Jew, and there was this man. Does anybody know his name? Robert Morse, a privately owned central bank. Is he a hero or is he a bad guy? Morse was a wealthy man who had grown richer during the war by trading in war materials. Trader. The new bank was called the Bank of North America. It was modeled after the Bank of England. It was allowed to practice fractional reserve banking. This means it could lend money the bank didn't have and charge usury on it. Pretty good deal. Soon the dangers became clear as the value of the American currency continued to plummet down, which is happening now. As a result, the bank's charter was not renewed in the year 1775. So we're free of the central bank. But 6 years later, that makes what, 1781? 6 years later? Alexander Hamilton, Robert Morris, and several others pushed a new bill through Congress for another privately owned bank. Is Hamilton a good guy? I don't think so. Robert Morris a good guy? No. This new bank was called the First Bank of the United States. There was much debate about this national bank at the convention. After only 3 years after signing of the new Constitution, the Secretary of Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, proposed a bill calling for a new privately owned central bank. Congress passed the banking bill proposed by Hamilton and gave it a 20-year charter. I would suggest that the Constitution should have had in it that there could be no central bank whatsoever in this country. What a deal this was. The bank had 80% of its stock held by private investors, while the remaining was purchased by the United States government. The reason was a scheme to provide the cash needed for the other owners. So the U.S. government puts up its initial $2 million in cash. Then through fractional reserves, the bank made loans to its charter investors so they could come up with the remaining $8 million needed for this risk-free investment. Boy, they're just such scumbuckets. The name of the bank was like the name of the Bank of England, hiding it from the names of the private investors. However, it was well known that the Rothschilds were the driving power behind the Bank of the United States. Now, we got a picture here of Rothschild. I don't know if you can read the white print under it. It gives his name, and then under it, it says, American and British intelligence have documented evidence that the House of Rothschilds and other international bankers have done what? Financed both sides of every war since the American Revolution. Now, you believe that or not, but that's American and British intelligence has said that. Since the American Revolution, they have financed both sides. Now, here's something I found. It's not in here yet. In 1880, the Bank of France was organized in the same manner as the Bank of England. Now, 1800, who was in power in France? Napoleon. Well, Napoleon, the leader in France, and Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States, struck a deal. Napoleon gave a huge piece of land west of the Mississippi to the United States for $3 million in gold. He needed this money to finance his army as he set off to conquer Europe. This gave the United States a vast land which was called the Louisiana Purchase, a land in which to settle. That's how we got the land, from France. In 1811, a bill was given to Congress to renew the Bank of the United States. They were split. The debate was heated, and representatives of Pennsylvania and Virginia passed resolution asking Congress to kill the bank. And look what the press said. The press today openly called the bank a swindle, a vulture, a viper. Who else called them vipers? Oh, and a cobra. They didn't have the press back then. Now, even Nathan Rothschild warned that the United States would find itself involved in a most disastrous war if the bank's charter were not renewed. A single vote in the House decided the issue. I should say a single vote in the Senate as the Senate was deadlocked. They were split even. So who votes? Well, James Madison was the fourth president, and he was a staunch opponent of the bank. His vice president, you know, in the Senate, if there's a tie, he can vote. There was a tie. The vice president broke the tie in the Senate. He voted against the bank. It was as close as a vote as possible. But the bank was gone. What did Nathan Rothschild warn America if it was not? What war was that? The War of 1812. Within 5 months, England attacked the United States, and the War of 1812 was on. But while the British were fighting Napoleon, they had to come over here and fight us. The war ended in 1814. The British, what, they burnt down the White House. But they had war on two fronts. The moneylenders were out. But 2 years later, the bank was back. 1 year after Napoleon's battle at Waterloo, that'd be 1815, which destroyed Napoleon, the American Congress passed another bill allowing for the formation of another privately owned bank, the Second Bank of the United States. Rothschild had taken control over the Bank of England and the newly privately held Second Bank of the United States. After 12 years of the Second Bank of the United States manipulating the American economy, some of the American people had had enough. Opponents of the bank nominated a person to run for president. His name was Andrew Jackson. To the surprise of the moneylenders, he won. The bank's renewal wasn't up into 8 more years. It's chartered for 20 years. It had to be renewed. So the bank struck and hit an early blow. The banks asked Congress to sign a new renewal bill 4 years early. Congress said yes and sent the bill to the president for signing. What did the president do? He vetoed the bill. Andrew Jackson got some bad stuff about him. He's got to be applauded for this, what he did here. He vetoed the bill. In July of 1832, Congress was unable to override Jackson's veto. Well, this set up the next president election. Jackson took his campaign for re-election on the road with the campaign slogan, "Jackson and no bank." Jackson and no bank. Jackson defeated Senator Henry Clay in a landslide. The American people were against the central bank. But the battle was just beginning. Jackson instructed his Secretary of Treasury to remove the deposits, that's the U.S. deposits, from the Second Bank and to put them in state banks. The first two secretaries of the Treasury refused and were fired. It wasn't until the third secretary that finally obeyed President Jackson. The president of the bank made the money scarce to force Congress to restore the bank. In fact, Congress even censored President Jackson. This made Jackson even madder. And look what he said. Quote, "You," talking about the bankers, "are a den of vipers, and I intend to rout you out, and by God, I will rout you out." That's President Jackson. The words that President Jackson used were very similar to the words of Jesus that I read to you in the beginning part. A den of vipers compared to a den of thieves. It was similar because vipers were thieves. Congress is about to vote in another 20 years charter for the bank when the House of Representatives voted 124-82 against recharting the bank. The bank refused to have its books looked at. Does the Federal Reserve, has it ever been audited? And the president of the bank, whose name was Biddle, refused to testify before the Committee of Congress. He wouldn't go. President Jackson was the only president who paid off the national debt and left the nation with a surplus. The bank charter ran out, and the Second Bank of the United States ceased functioning as the nation's central bank. It took the money changers 77 more years before it could undo the damage that President Jackson had caused it. What a story. It goes on. Although Jackson killed the central bank, unfortunately, fractional reserve banking remained in use by the numerous state chartered banks. This fueled economic instability in the years before the War of Northern Aggression, which many people call the Civil War. Still, the central bankers were out, and as a result, Americans thrived as it expanded westward. The central bankers struggled to regain power of the bank, but to no avail. Then finally, they reverted to the old central bankers' formula of war. To create what? Debt and dependency. If they couldn't get their bank any other way, America could be brought to its knees by plunging it into a war between who? Themselves. Just as they had done in 1812 after the first bank in the United States was not rechartered. Oh. Now they were going to have a war between the states. The moneylenders, the bankers, decided that one large nation could hurt their national banks in Europe. I'm going to read that again. The moneylenders decided that one large nation could hurt their national banks in Europe. They reasoned that war in the southern states would be the dire economic situation due to the reaction of the northern states. Northern industrious had used trade tariffs to prevent the southern states from buying cheaper European goods. Europe subsequently retaliated by stopping cotton imports from the south. Thus, the south had been forced to pay more for goods while having their income slashed. This gave the money changers the opportunity to divide and conquer America by plunging it into a major war. Shortly after the war began, the Rothschilds made a loan to Napoleon III. That isn't the actual Napoleon. It's Napoleon III of France for over 200 million francs to seize Mexico and then station troops along the southern border of the United States by taking advantage of the war to return Mexico to colonial rule. Did you know that? The Rothschild Bank gave France a big loan, and they were to go to Mexico, and they were stationed on our border. The British followed suit by moving 11,000 troops into, where would they go? Canada. And positioning them along America's northern border. President Lincoln knew he was in trouble. You got France and Mexico, you got the British and Canada. So President Lincoln knew he was in trouble. He goes to New York to apply for loans necessary to fund America's defense. Now, which side did the Rothschilds want to win? The North or the South? The Rothschilds had engineered the war to make the Union fail. That means they wanted the the South to win. So they instructed their American banks to offer loans between 24 to 36%. Lincoln angrily refused. Instead, he decided to print greenbacks. These are printed at no interest to the federal government and are used to pay the troops and purchase their supplies. And I have a thing there, President Lincoln, 16th President of the United States, approaches the big banks in New York to try to obtain loans to support the ongoing American Civil War. And here's something also very interesting. In addition, President Lincoln discovered that the Tsar of Russia, Alexander II, was having problems with the Rothschilds as well, as he had been refusing their continued attempts to set up a central bank in Russia. The Tsar then gives President Lincoln some unexpected help. Which side did the Rothschilds want to win? The South. So Tsar of Russia, Alexander II, was having trouble with the Rothschilds. So he's going to fight for the North. He didn't actually fight. The Tsar issued orders that if either England or France actively intervened in the American war between the states and helps the South, Russia would consider such action a declaration of war and would take the side of the North. To show that he wasn't messing around, he sent part of the Pacific Fleet to a port in San Francisco and another part to a port in New York. The Rothschilds were thwarted again. The North won and the South was devastated. It took the European banks 48 more years before they got their national bank once again in America. This year will be the 100th year of the Federal Reserve. Now my conclusions. When man begins to reap the consequences of his sin, he begins to consider obeying God. People who have allergies or heart problems and go to a doctor are usually immediately given a sheet of paper telling them which foods to avoid. And topping the list are usually pork, shellfish, and fat. When man gets in trouble, he begins to obey God without even realizing it. So many Christians begin to obey God, and hopefully they will obey him conscientiously, realizing there's a matter of obedience, not an option, and repent of his sins and ask forgiveness, and not merely consider the change of actions as a result of mere circumstance, but the need for repentance to be delivered from the results of sin. What is the answer for the churches of Jesus Christ? It's always the same answer, just like it was for the Waldensians and others in the past. The first thing, do not ever incorporate. An incorporated church is a fictitious entity whose head is not in Jesus Christ, but whose head is in the state. If you belong to a 501c3 church, you need to find one that is not a member of this IRS scam. And I will say that most churches are corporations on this scam. The second thing, church, close your doors. The New Testament clearly shows that the church is only a place for the congregating of Israelite believers, confirmed believers who submit to the church. The modern practice of baptizing anyone who wants to be was not followed in the New Testament, and John the Baptist is a good example who refused to baptize some people. And the accepting of all races as members of the congregation puts in doubt the church's authority to be the place of the true gospel of Jesus Christ. The church is to be an Israelite-only church that believes in the covenant that was made with their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The third thing, beware of false prophets. The The true church needs to divorce itself from all false doctrine the false church has infected its mind with. And for the first time, read the Bible and see what God actually says, and then abide by it. You need to learn who the money lenders are and follow their history as they attempt to rule the world. It affects us. I went to church for years, decades, and never ever heard of this. You stand against the evils of this world. Abortion's an evil. Usury's an evil. Sodomy's an evil. Idolatry's an evil. Fornication, adultery, effeminate, lust, greed. You stand against those evils. Let me ask you a question. Who would Jesus Christ describe anybody as being the generation of vipers? If he was here today, would he call certain people this earth generation of vipers? And being blind guides, hypocrites, serpents in today's world. There's a nation in Europe who hasn't been in war since 1815. Does anybody know who that nation is? Switzerland. Right smack in the middle of Europe. They haven't been in a war in two more years. It'd be 200 years. Why is that? The Bank of International Settlements is there. Would Jesus Christ, if he was here today, go to Switzerland, into that bank, and cast out those money changers? The Vatican, London, and Washington, D.C. are three other mile-square areas where our Savior would go and destroy the banks that have caused so much slavery on the earth. The fourth thing I would say is imprecatory prayer. Use this prayer that will cause God's intervention in the situations that only God can heal Israel land. Could we use imprecatory prayer to help our nation get away from the Federal Reserve System? May our God be merciful in the coming days. The last I have is up here on the wall. It's an article, Kissinger, Obama's task is to help create a what? Kissinger, Obama's task is to help create a new world order. I'll read the first one or two paragraphs. President Nixon's Secretary of State, this goes back to President Nixon, the aging Henry Kissinger recently told CNBC that he believes the current world economic crisis is a great opportunity for President-elect Obama to help create a new world order. If you understand what his job is, you understand what the deal is. What do you think the most important thing is for Barack Obama? Kissinger was asked. If you had to say this is going to be the country or the conflict or the place that will define the Obama administration, what will it be? He's going to create a new world order. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel. I hope that we can stand and fight against this terrible thing. That when Jesus Christ was here, he did it too. He took a whip and drove him out of the temple. They got so mad at him that they sought to do what? Destroy and kill him. And they did. That's who the battle was with. I find it very interesting that England, which is where a lot of our great-great-great-grandparents came from, Scotland, Ireland, France, Germany, Sweden, they all kicked the Jews out. The problem was they let them back in. And when England let them back in 1650, the Jews, that's why I think something happened. They became so angry and sought revenge that they started the National Bank of England. Then they started wars to get the nations in debt to them. Till eventually we're in a place where almost every nation, there's only, what, about seven nations left that doesn't have their bank in there? Now, what people do not have banks to charge usury to their people? That is the Muslim world. And when Libya fell, there was a Rothschild bank while the war was going on. They want all their banks controlled. They're going to control all the world. And then they'll set up their world government. It's not going to happen. Why do I say that? Because our God said, he actually made a whip and drove them out. How dare you make my house, my father's house, a den of thievery? So there's hope. I do hope that we will have imprecatory prayer, and I do hope the prayer is made against the Federal Reserve System. If you'd be interested in that, I'll let you know what's going to happen. But I think I would love to go to be a part of it. I don't want to be a leader in it. I want to be a – I've never done it before. I would love to go with them and put my hands on that wall and say, bring her down. Because we have the God of the universe on our side. Any questions or comments about this message?